Welcome to Starfleet Universe On Call. I am Paul Franz, owner of Franz Games. I run SFB Online, Bedcom Online, and Starfleet Warlord. Just a reminder, how to join us, we have TalkCast every Thursday night starting at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time. You can either call on the phone, just dial 605-562-0444, just follow the directions, the call ID is 17702. Or you can participate on the web, just go to the Talk's website, www.talkshoe.com, search for call ID 17702, or Starfleet Universe On Call, or SFU On Call, you should be able to find us there. But if you want the best online experience, go to twitch.com/SFU On Call. Yes, that's right. twitch.tv/SFU On Call. SFUONCALL. You will find us there. You'll find a wonderful chat room there, especially if you join us live for the broadcast, which is, again, 9:30 on Thursday nights. Just a reminder, actually, as I mentioned that, is that actually next Thursday night on the 22nd, we will not have a podcast because I will not be able to, I will not be available because I need to go pick up my daughter from the airport, so I will not be able to be here for that podcast, and no one's going to replace me on the podcast. So next week we're going to have a week off. I shall be back on the 27th of December. So enjoy your holidays. And moving on, if you need to contact me for any reason, my email address is sfuoncall@gmail.com. It's sfuoncall@gmail.com. Also, if you want to follow me on Twitter, if it's still running these days, you can follow SFU On Call. That has everything to do with the podcast. You have, of course, Paul Franz. That's my personal account. Then Franz Games, FranzGames. And, of course, this lovely TalkCast gets turned to podcasts available on iTunes and various other feeds around the net. From A to B this week, not much going on. The operations update for F&E is completed. So if you want to buy that, I forget if they actually said it was hard copy was available or not. That was the double check on that. I apologize. I saw the announcement. I didn't read the full announcement. But moving on to the SFB Online tournament, the Sapphire Star tournament, we actually have round two is completed, and the semifinals are half completed. So we know who's going to be one person in the final. That's going to be Cadence Stimpy in the Gorn. Should be interesting because there's two possibilities for his opponent. One is the Wynn Auxiliary Battlecruiser flown by Moose. That's right, Stephen McCann. Or the other one is a Romulan KR, honestly, I forget off the top of my head who his opponent was, and I apologize because I did look it up. I remember Moose. I didn't remember the other guys, but I remember the ships that they were flying. So definitely keep an eye on for that, and hopefully they will announce the date for when they're going to be flying. So that would be great to have them there. And of course, when it comes to the library report, not much happening there. No updates, no fixes for... Actually, there is one fix I did myself for the ISC CAT, the torpedo cruiser. There was a minor issue with the F refit, which I fixed myself really quick. That was an update to the library. But other than that, nothing for the SFB Online, SFB Library, or the FedCom Library for SFB Online. So with that, that is the news for this week. And it's me, some of the old Paul Friends, welcoming you to Starfleet Universe On Call. And tonight, well, it seems to be Gary. How you doing, Gary?
Hello, how are you?
Doing good. And Jeff, how you doing, Jeff?
Good evening.
And I'm assuming Doug's not here because of his little ones. My godson and his other
son. It is the season.
True. I actually saw a quick Facebook post. I'm not sure what, I did not look to see when this was, whether it was today or yesterday, of one of the boys making a toolbox. You know, it's a real simple, you know, wooden toolbox where you, it's a little box, and you attach the handle to it, the handle. So it's not that complicated of a project. But, you know, he was working on it. I'm not sure how much he did himself, how much it was pre-put together, you know, but it looked like he was having fun. You know, the whole part of being like part of Santa's workshop kind of thing. You know, so. Look, you know, it was quite cool. And now for the rest of y'all, I'll just pre-announce this so I don't have to worry about possibly forgetting it completely for the entire show, because I have done that, where it's like I almost have to add it on to the very, 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 very end, which is next week. That's going to be December 22nd. The podcast for December 22nd, there will not be a podcast for December 22nd because of I need to go pick up my daughter from the airport, which means that I will, because her flight comes at 11:15 at night, you know, as in, you know, 45 minutes before midnight, that kind of thing, that I will definitely not be able to make it for a 9:30 podcast, because it'd be a very short podcast. Otherwise, it'd be like, hi, goodbye. But we will have a podcast on the December 29th. So between Christmas and New Year's, we will have a podcast. I will be doing a show that evening, which is fortunate, because I know there have been some Christmases where it's like neither one, where like Christmas is either on Thursday or Friday. I don't do it on either of those days. And that's a gotcha, I think, when it comes to the way Christmas falls with New Year's, which is exactly 7 days apart.
It can be brutal.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. This year, to me, it's weird, because I don't remember. I truly do not remember the last time Christmas was actually on a Sunday. You know? It's been a while. Because the thing is, I'm Catholic. Which means that it's a holy day of obligation. That means that I need to go to church that day. So, if it's like on a Saturday, I have to go both Saturday and Sunday. And this is going to be the one time there's no additional day I need to go to church. So, it's weird in that case. Oh, come on.
Well, at least this Sunday, you could, if you stay at home, you could claim that you're watching the Pope's team playing the World Cup final.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and, oh, there it goes.
That Pope Francis is from Argentina, and they're going to be playing against France for the World Cup.
Yes, Sunday. Yes. As I heard, which is going to be supposed to be a really good game. And
I just wanted to mention that before we dive into Starfleet Universe stuff, because I guess there's plenty to talk about there, but I wanted to take a brief detour back into Battletech Oddcult, if that's okay. Because,
sure.
You know, sometimes I mention it mainly as a compare and contrast with how ADP's doing, because
right.
They're both longingly franchises with various, like, spread universes and stuff. So I missed the initial announcement when it was released, but a few weeks ago, the folks at Catalyst actually got around to formally releasing the new Alpha Strike box set. So, I think it's about $60 US or $65, but it comes with 5 clan mechs, enough for a star, and 8 inner sphere mechs, enough for 2 lances. And it comes with like a bit of fiction and a universe primer, introduction rules to Alpha Strike, and I think a bit of terrain and stuff, because Alpha Strike is generally designed to be played on a hexless board. But you can, I guess, convert it into a hex game if you want to. I just thought it'd be a quick mention just to kind of give a sense, because up until now, the box sets that they've done for, like, quote-unquote classic Battletech. They've mm-hmm. given you, like, the classic record sheets and maybe one or two mechs at a time.
Right.
But this one, because it's introducing a game that's more at a Lance or a Star level,
right.
it's giving you 13 mechs, and it's giving you the quicker unit cards that you use in Alpha Strike. So I guess it's like the equivalent of, like, back when Mongoose were basically doing the fleet boxes for a Call to Arms Starfleet, and the idea is that you're not using a big SSD or ship card for each ship. You're basically just using the entry that's in Acta SF for that, but you're getting a whole bunch of ships at once. So it's kind of interesting to see that they're going that kind of route with the way to help introduce the game system. And of course, there's nothing to stop classic Battletech users from using those same mechs.
Mm-hmm.
They just might have to get their own hex map if they don't have one already. So it's kind of between it and also the new Universe Primer that they're due to come out next year, which is basically set to help people get up to speed with what's been happening in the Battletech universe through to the year 3150. Those two products would kind of be like the kind of thing that I think would be useful for ADB in terms of being able to help people get a broader sense of where the various where the universe is now, and you know, where they're able to jump in, what the game systems exist. You know, like the topic that we were meant to talk about this month, but then it didn't work out. So that's, we'll have to wait till January for that one. But yeah, I don't know if you want to have if you want to bring it up on the video feed just to show people what it looks like, just before we pivot away from the back to the SFU.
Okay, where would I find it?
Just go to just Google. I think it's bg.battletech.com. Let me just double check that now.
bg.battletech.com.
Yeah, bg.battletech.com.
Oh. Okay. You don't Google for that. You just bring it up. It's a website.
Yeah, just sorry. I guess I thought Google. You might need to Google because I didn't fully remember the URL.
Mm-hmm. Understood. Okay, so what were we looking at?
So if you look over on the right, where I have the list of recent posts, there's the one in the bold font that says "Now available Alpha Strike box sets."
Hmm. Cool.
Yeah, it's actually $79.99.
Okay, I'm gonna do this.
But if you scroll down, it'll actually show you a bunch of the
stuff. That's Federation and Empire type money.
Well, mm-hmm. bear in mind that the box sets that Mongoose were selling for fleets, they weren't that cheap. But I guess the idea is that you would get a fair amount of use out of them because it would be like an entire fleet's worth of ships for like. But the difference though is that the Call to Arms stuff that Mongoose was doing, they were empire by empire. So if you wanted like a Federation box set, or if you wanted a Klingon box set, you would get.
No. I was referring to F&E.
Yeah, but although Battletech's closest equivalent to F&E would be Inner Sphere at War. The rules for that are in Interstellar Operations, so that one is basically where you get a map of the Inner Sphere, and you get various economic rules for the house capitals, and you're able to like move regiments around and so on.
Right.
But yeah, this one is more like, there's probably not, I suppose, if you bought Klingon Border and Romulan Border at the same time, and if both of those boxes gave you the Shapeways miniatures to represent the ships that you get on the ship cards, that's probably the closest thing I can think of in terms of what this is basically doing.
Mm-hmm.
But in the same way that when you buy Klingon Border or Romulan Border, you only get the rules to represent the ships that are in the box. So you still can go out and buy the reference rule book separately. The same sort of thing applies here, where it comes with a starter rule set, but if you want a more complete way to play Alpha Strike, you can buy a separate rule book, which is called Alpha Strike Commander's Edition. And that's that basically consolidates all of the rules that are really needed to play Alpha Strike through to 3150. So you'll be able to get stuck in that way.
So, as you pointed out, these mechs are not the original BattleTech, where they had kind of quote unquote SSD sheets. You know, these are more abstracted when it comes to.
Well, if anyone remembers the old Battle Force game system, now Battle Force still exists, but it's the idea is that when you play Battle Force, you basically just have two rows of bubbles, one for the internals and one for the armor. And Catalyst actually have a website called the Master Unit List, which gives you the Alpha Strike unit card, or the Battle Force unit card for that matter, because the same unit card applies for both, for almost every mech in the game. So you can actually, the same way that you can use the Commander Circle for Federation Commander to get a bunch of the black and white ship cards for free, Catalyst make that similar kind of service available. So if people want to be able, like say for example, this box set comes with a miniature for the clan Timberwolf, or the what the Inner Sphere are called, the Mad Cat. Now, you can use the variants that they give you in the box, but if you want to go onto the Master Unit List and knock up every Timberwolf variant that has been published in every technical readout or record sheet or whatever, the Alpha Strike unit card version of it is there, and you can print it out and you can use it in your own game if you want to. And it even tells you the various specific special abilities that it has that you'll account for if you get the Commander's Edition with the book. So, yeah. So I guess that's kind of like... no, actually, because, I mean, there are some mission variants that are in the Commander Circle, but not too many. So. But yeah, I'm sorry, the point I was trying to get at is that when Battle Force was created, the whole idea is that you would have the Lance or Star as a single counter on the board.
Right.
So the reason why you had those like simplified bubbles is because you'd have five of them if you're a clan player in a single PEX,
mm-hmm.
or you'd have four of them in a single play if you're a Spheroid player. But with Alpha Strike, what they did is that they broke the individual counter into individual miniatures,
right.
Four or five miniatures, and they removed the hex board. So it was basically a way to kind of like re-engineer the Battle Force system into a fast play miniature game.
Okay, but do the miniatures represent a single unit, or do they represent a squad?
Each unit card represents the individual mech.
Okay.
So, because in Battle Force, what you would do is you would basically have like a paper sheet, and you would basically have like four or five or six entries, whatever. And you'd almost like you have to manually fill them in to say, okay, these are the mechs I'm taking, and this is how much structure and armor they have,
mm-hmm.
and any special rules you might need. Now you don't have to do that anymore, because with Alpha Strike, you can basically just go to the Master Unit List, and you can just get them tailored to the individual mech that you want.
Yeah, okay. Cool. Go back.
So yeah, I just wanted to put that out there. But I do think that the real big thing is going to be the book that I'm coming out with next year, The Universe Primer, because I really wish that there was a similar... because the closest thing that we have in the SSU is probably the Cold War book for Prime Directive.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not divorced, because it's still... You're coming with a game, or RPG rule set. And it doesn't really give you like a really more kind of like broad view about what's going on in the SFU. It's really basically tailored to role playing.
Because
the Universe Primer, when that comes out, you don't have to use it with only Alpha Strike or only Total Warfare or only the various Battletech RPGs. And, like, you don't even have to use any of those at all, because, you know, Catalyst sell novels as well, and so there's people who maybe they just read the books and they didn't play the games. So I think something similar, like a rule-agnostic book or a product that was like a Universe Primer for the SFU, I think would be a great idea. But that's just me.
Mm-hmm. Oh, understood. Yeah, I would love to... I was just looking at this going, I'm almost drooling. And just because it's like, it's that middle ground. Pre-extracted out ships that we don't have, which to me would be fantastic for fleet battles, where you can actually it's a little more, it's not as abstracted out as an F&E. You actually have individual units. It's more of the point where I really would like to have a ship and a system is Starfire abstraction. That at that level, where basically it's you know, if it's can be something as simple as just kind of marking off this line of systems, which would for I think SFB be really would apply very, very easily too. You know, and just say, okay, these are the systems that get you know, damaged or destroyed, you know, along that line. Because basically it's like rolling a damage allocation. And this is the average results, and go boom. Okay, so you got this much damage, boom, da 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 da. And maybe and abstract out the whole idea of shields. Okay, we no longer have to worry about the shield facing. You know, at we got to that level. We still have a defensive potential, and as you go along that line, you mark down the defensive potential, i.e., how much shield you have available to you, and go until it's completely destroyed. You know, I think that level is, that's one of those things that I think is missing from the Starfleet universe, and I think I would love that. You can really do those really large fleet battles, which I think some people just they imagine, especially if you've ever watched Star Trek, you know, like the Next Generation, where they have these huge, you know, fleet battles.
But yeah, that was more DS9, but yes.
Yeah, true. Well, more DS9, I agree.
Well, one thing you can notice is, you know how, like, if you're looking at a counter in Federation and Empire, and it basically has, like, a number that you use, like, so, for example, like, a Federation heavy cruiser has, like, a combat factor of 8. Well, if you have a look at the cards in Starfleet Battle Force, you might notice that if you could look at the various entries that are on there, like one for drone and one for photon and so forth,
mm-hmm.
You've got 8 boxes. You've got, like, it basically gives you, like, a number 8 on there as well. So I feel that, I don't know if it's been confirmed or not, but I'm fairly sure that the various Starfleet Battle Force cards, the price of them, or so to speak, or the value of them, is equal to their F&E combat factor, at least for units that have, so some F&E units have, like, a stronger either attack factor or defense factor. But so in theory, I suppose what you could do is you could do, like, a hybrid system where you're using, like, either a board or a hex map, or maybe even, like, a Shapeways 1 to 7,000 miniature to represent the actual ship. And you're giving it some maybe very basic movement rules. But then you use the Starfleet Battle Force cards to represent the damage they score, both to them and the damage that they inflict on another thing. So or even use the F&E combat system or something. And, like, instead of basically just waiting to do the cripple, get to the point where you cripple, you basically, the hits that you land, you basically just mark them right away on the card. So then it's like giving you a little bit of granularity in terms of what the ship's capability degrading. But you don't need to actually create an entirely new scale of card to represent that. You just use the ones that, either the printed ones that exist in the VHS box, or you can use the PDF samples that they have on the website, on the Starfleet Battle Force portion of the website.
Hmm. Right. Trust me. I've definitely thought about that too, which is the idea of, and I've actually done a podcast about this in the past, which is the idea of taking current product and reusing it. And one of those things was, obviously, the Battle Force cards. Because those cards, even to this day, how old those cards are? I mean, was it 15 years old? You know?
Older?
It's been 20? Older. Oh, geez.
It was, I got a set from a merchant at a fan convention in January of 2001.
Wow. So easily 20 years old.
I remember getting the pre-production beta test set from, no, I take that back. That was a different product, but it was a deck of cards product in the mid-90s. But mm-hmm. Battle Force, when it came out, I think it dropped in 99.
That would not surprise me. I'd really have to look back. I know they still have copies of it, but here's the point. The point is that the graphics.
That web page on the BBS, the ADB site that it took forever for me to find the last time. I think I was calling in the one that's it's got the update list.
Yes,
it tells you like when the various products were published and if or when they were updated. I'm fairly sure that stuff you've got the horses on there.
Mm-hmm. Don't mind.
Well, speaking of updates, Strategic Operations, I believe it is, just got like a update on Warehouse 23.
Yes, yes.
And also Advanced Operations is being polished off. So now the ADBs, or at least the call's focus, is going to be on picking one of the three outstanding FedCom module ideas and going ahead with that.
Ah, there it is. There it is. Yep. Starfleet Battle Force card game first published in 2001. And they say a video box, which it was. It was the box it came in was basically a box for a VCR tape.
VHS tape without the pegs to hold the reels.
Yep. And it says no revisions, which is true.
Can confirm.
Wow. The future expansions to Starfleet Battle Force, but none on the schedule. The Carrier Force, Strike Force, Invasion Force, Planetary Force, something. To me, the biggest issue with the Starfleet Battle Force is the cards and the way the system works. The system is designed with a certain balance given the cards that you have. And the problem is if you add cards, you offset that balance that you already have as part of the game set. But adding expansions really doesn't work in my mind. You know?
Well, the thing about that is that for the last 20 years, they've been adding new empires for playtest ship cards and new monsters and new thing cards for Starfleet Battle Force, and almost all of them are actually available as free PDFs on the SFBM,
right.
The Battle Force section of the ADB website. So I guess the trick would be that you'd probably need to have a critical mass of new cards with a certain type of balance to be able to make a second deck work. But
right.
I guess the thing I was trying to get at is that, in theory, you could basically, you know, maybe take a leaf from Catalyst in the sense that they were able to basically extract ideas and blow up one game system. Now, I say blow up, but the original game system still exists. But basically, they were able to, like, rip ideas out of an existing game system
mm-hmm.
and reinterpret them in a way to give them an entirely different game system. That's actually been more successful. So I'm not to say that the idea I had would be more successful in Battle Force, but that's not the case. But basically, the same principle where you could basically take all those Battle Force cards and then repurpose them in a different way. I don't know if that might be something to ponder or not. But
Oh, understood.
But yeah, actually, I was just going to say that.
Yeah, it would be possible to use the cards as way of doing it now. I'd have to look at. I have to think. I have to look at the cards and think about that, and how if we could actually use cards in that way, which would be interesting. Now, the tough part, obviously, is that those cards can never be run again. Meaning, I'm not sure they did a whole big run of them, and I'm pretty sure ADB already said that those cards, that quality, they couldn't get again. But it would, doing a new set of cards using the same graphics. I'm assuming they still have the graphics laying around, which, as I said, the point I was trying to make earlier, which is that basically those graphics hold up. The how beautiful they are still holds up 20 years later. Now, the only thing I'll have to admit is that they don't have the quote-unquote modern look. You know, the background and the foreground, they changed it a little bit, the way the perspective and so forth for those pictures are normally used in quote-unquote modern games. So, but I personally don't care. But Gary, that's one thing. I'm gonna look at my set, because I do have one or two sets of Battle Force cards. I'll take a look see at that to see if that would be possible to use as actually representing ships. You know, and okay, this is kind of your quote unquote SSD for that ship. Which I think would be kind of cool to use. And mentioned from the chat room that Chris Newsy pointed out, the closest thing that we currently have to Starfire for SFU is Star Armada SFU Unity, which, of course, I would definitely respond back immediately and say that it's close, but not there. Because of it's not as abstracted out as Starfire is. And at least the point where I imagine it being this really great thing because Starfire, you would fly at the fleet level, and there was tactics involved in that. And because the one thing I would love to see, what I would love to see is a system, excuse me, I need to put on my Do Not Disturb so I don't get any more bleeps. That is a system that we could avoid, or maybe just write it into the rules and say you can't do this, which is the one big issue. I think so many people have had problems in the past with SFB, which is super stacks. The whole idea of that you have all your ships in one hex. I know FedCom went forward and tried to put a penalty into super stacks, where if you try to fire, you have penalties, which I think is that's a good way of going overall.
That call to arms goes even further, because there's no stacking at all, which is one reason why I think that when the IFV are brought over to call to arms, I think the echelon is going to work a lot better there, because both sides will have to basically have their ships spread out a bit, and that means that it'll actually give the IFV player a chance to actually try and fire their PPDs like past the gun line and see if it works that way.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. Chris,
it's worth noting that Fed Commander limits super stacks for direct fire. It only allows three ship equivalents to fire out of the same hex.
Right.
But it doesn't limit seeking weapons. So if you're like a Romulan or a Gorn player, you can still, unfortunately, build a seeker stack or like have your entire fleet in one hex and launch all your plasma torpedoes at once, which. But yeah.
Oh yeah. Understood. That was one thing I was doing some work on tonight, which I should have been working on previously. I guess the biggest issue, I did not know exactly what I wanted to write, what tactics I wanted to involve when it comes to my battle group. Which, have you written up yours, Gary? Did you write up your tactics article?
I did the. I got drawn against the Orions.
Yep.
Which,
I know.
It's kind of unfortunate because, like on the SFB side of the battle group, the cruisers were size class 3 units were discarded. Mm-hmm. But because the Orion Raider cruiser is kind of a weird one, it was basically given a move cost of half in FedCon, so it wasn't formally barred from the event. So, but in fairness, the guy who submitted it expected it to be shot down. Like he was like trying to bear ADB to not let him use it. But so at least I have at least the Carnivons have heel nippers, which work against warp engines. So in theory, that could help, limit the amount of doubling that the Orion did do. So
agreed.
But, actually, I was wondering because I know that one of our other callers today. Has an SFB force, and I was wondering if we wanted to put the floor open to him so he could discuss his thoughts about the scenario and his opponent and the force he ends up submitting.
Yeah, we can do that.
Yeah, let me just mention something real quick, and then Jeff, you can go on yours. For me, the biggest issue from mine was all the drones, because in theory, given the 4 ships and the 8 fighters, they can launch 15 drones each turn. So it makes things difficult, to say the very least. And the only good thing that I see about that situation is that since they're fighters, they have to land in the carrier to reload. So they have to land the wacky thing about FedCom with fighters is you can have a whole flight. And basically, since it has 8 fighters, it's 2 flights. So it takes 2 impulses to land all the fighters. While in SFB, it would take a heck of a lot longer to land that many fighters. So that's the only.
Oh, by the way, just want to mention that the most up-to-date rules for the fighters attack, playtest rules rather, are in Communique 128.
That's what I'm using.
So if you go to the, there's a yeah, that's right. So,
yeah, that was mentioned by. Was it Chris or Iggy? Chris or Iggy last week. Originally, it mentioned Captain Log number 37, but then said, the communique number 128 is the most up to date. And that's what I've been using. There are still things that aren't explicit on those rules, which I really would like to be explicit. My assumption is that. They don't say explicitly launch and land. They just say launch. A flight of fighters at a time. I'm assuming that if you can launch a flight, you can land a flight. You know, they do give. Oh, if you're not using flights, then
one thing I wanted to clarify from.
Yes.
Ambiguous language is ambiguous.
Yeah.
There is one thing I wanted to, because I was listening to the conversation from last week, just wanted to clarify that there is no such thing as the transfer of seeking weapon control in Fed Commander. So if a ship or a fighter loses control of its drones, they're gone. Like another ship cannot pick them up.
Oh, okay. That I did not know. So if I destroyed the fighter, any drones that fighter was controlling would go away. Understood. Okay, well, Jeff, on to you, my dear friend.
Well, the force that I got paired against was the Gorn, and he had it set up with a double bubble leader, a double bubble destroyer, a double bubble scout, and two frigates. And one of the things that I had to guard against is the fact that, all told, in his force, he's got 20 shuttles. So I guess it's a good thing he can't use those shuttles for information gathering, but he can
Right.
certainly use them as the auxiliary navy. I took the Orion force on the timesheet on the map sheet P timeline. So I had the massive wave of quantum wave torpedoes, and while I toyed around with using option mounts for AWR, I ended up reviewing the rules on doubling of size class 4 Orion ships and realized I didn't need it. So I ended up with a force of 17 quantum wave torpedoes, two ADD-12s, two scout channels, and one probe launcher. Well, egg on my face, I've only got four dedicated lab boxes and five probes, and every one of his ships has got two labs and five probes. So
Oh,
I
understood.
start from behind.
Yeah, oh, me too. I
The
as an Andromedan, we have no labs, so we have, in theory, one lab per ship, you know.
right. So, since this is Starfleet Battles and not Federation Commander, I decided to take full advantage of the super stack with 18 phaser ones in 360 arc. As long as I stay together to cover each other, and we can figure out which ship's being targeted by the wave of plasma if he launches any, I should be pretty good to keep a fairly high speed. I was thinking I'd double and run in on the first turn, overrun for a range zero lab on the object, drop a bunch of mines to discourage the Gorn making a range zero run. Turn around, spin it around, and set it up all over again. The only issue I really have is trying to play the game such that I've got three or four quantum wave torpedoes in flight at any given time, and never so many quantum wave torpedoes on any significant target to encourage him to weasel until all of his shuttles are committed. At which point, then I can alpha launch on targets when they can no longer weasel. About the only tactic I can't really do much with is if he leaves one of his frigates on the far side of the map, cutting circles in space on his border, waiting for the rest of his ships to gather what they can and depart. I just can't split my force like
Well,
that.
that's the kind of thing I hope that ADB rejects as a tactic, because I think it's against
Right.
the spirit of the battle. Like, you're supposed to fight, not just like show the
Right.
flag. And I think keeping one of your ships hiding from everyone else, I think that counts as not fighting. So.
Yeah, but as I say, I think with that force and under those conditions, I've got a fair shot to cripple or pop one of the frigates on the first battle pass, especially if he wants to try to play games with reinforcement. I'll just turn around and use a phaser or two off of all of the offensive ships and scratch the shield, the impulse before the quantum wave torpedoes land. It's going to be interesting, that's to be sure. I'm not sure what Nick has for his tactics. I swapped a couple of emails with him, and we thought we might game it out after the deadline, but I haven't heard back from him. I'd be interested to hear what his tactics on the idea or his ideas are on the encounter. But yeah, it's one of those oddballs. It's since my force doesn't have really good means to gather information, I have to gather what I can. So I've got greater than zero and focus on knocking the Gorn out and keeping the Gorn, which is about where you're at, isn't it?
Yep.
Well, I guess the advantage is that you don't have to wait for three turns for your plasmas to reload. So
no, nope, I'll have quantum wave torpedoes every turn. And...
Yep.
Exactly.
The only other thing is that when with trying to get to range four or less for good data from the labs that I do have on the study object, if he gets there and star castles and start deploying the auxiliary shuttle fleet, then I've got to be careful with this, with keeping the speed up and keeping the electronic warfare game on my side, because he could go Bolty McBolterson and really ruin my day if I'm not careful. Of course, that's why one of the other things I suggested in my article is have one light raider set up for anti-fighter, anti-drone work to start building a shatter pack at once. Because if I can knock down half a dozen or more of his shuttles in a single attack, that would be quite worthwhile.
Although I'm actually now thinking about like the equivalent battle, Bravian influenced Orion versus Gorn in Fed Commander would be with the same scenario, because on the one hand, neither of you would be able to start castle because there's no general reinforcement in Fedcom, and on the other hand, shuttles are not armed with phasers, so you'd both basically have to rely on the firepower of your ships. But on the other hand, the faster you go, the harder it is for either the quantum wave torpedoes or his plasma to actually hit the other guy. So there is still kind of like, how important is it to keep the speed high up and mitigate the seeking weapon diversion? Because you can't start castle. On the other hand, how important is it to not get too far away from the object so that you can actually get the lab information?
Right.
So I think that would basically make a very
well. There's a couple of other points. There's no housekeeping in Fed Commander, which means that the power advantage shifts to the Orion. There's no electronic warfare in Fed Commander, so as long as the Orion still gets his stealth coding bonus, that advantage goes to the Orion.
Yeah, the in Fed Commander, the Orion has a... they basically just give it like a plus one or minus one modifier, whichever is the one that you need, depending on the weapon that's shooting at.
Right.
But there is no such thing as ECCM. So, but the other thing is that with Fed Commander, I think the negative shift, it can never go above three. So, like for example, in theory, you could rack up a really high ECM versus ECCM, and I think you can get higher than three. I can't remember now, but you can't do that in Fed Commander because there's only a certain limit that you'd need. So.
Right.
Well, he does have carronades for any plasma apps he's got.
What's the year in service for carronades?
Well, the thing is that in Fed Commander, if you play in the main era, most, if not entirely all, weapons are available by default. But I'm pretty sure that the carronade is available by Y175.
Okay, well, this is the medium speed. This is the medium speed drone era.
Well, in Fed Commander, medium speeds count as speed 24, because basically to correspond with the fact that the ships are faster with no housekeeping, the drones are faster.
Right.
The drone speeds are set to match the baseline speeds of the ships themselves. So, for example, if you're using the middle year ship cards in Fedcom Briefing 2, the drones are set to speed 16. And then in the standard main era, they're set to 24. But then if you play in a scenario from 2580 onwards, they go up to speed 32, but you have to do the same drone tax that you pay in FFB.
The plasma carronade was available as of Y... Okay, Jeff, The plasma carronade was available as it was deployed by the Gorns about Y-165.
Okay, that if it was that early, then it would be available.
Yeah, Orion's technology was available as of Y-170. Winds 175, and for the Federation, 175 also.
Yeah, although I do like the idea that, because in the SFB carronade rules, it actually gives you a suggestion that, in theory, you could create a weapon that you would refer to as PLC on the SFB, which is only a carronade. So it would almost be like if you're creating a new simulator empire, or if you wanted to have like some sort of new, say, one planet weapon that the Orions or Zosman Marauders found, and the weapon they have is this thing that's only a carronade, because I'm pretty sure they can fire those every turn. So in theory, the Gorn, if most of his smaller ships rely on their Fs, they could chase you around with the carronades. And because in Fed Commander, the other thing as well is that Fed Commander switches on the shield burn through, or what SFB refers to as leaky shields. But as an SFB, leaky shields are optional and no one ever uses them, which I think it's a shame. But in Fed Commander, the shield burn through is on by default. So once you hit that threshold of the 10th damage point, you're scoring the internal. And if you're not lucky, that internal could be a weapon that you need, or a command and 12 center locks or something like that. So,
well, against the Orion force, the Orion ships are relatively fragile anyway, and light on the boxes for the missions they run. But yeah, you're right. I think the way the plasma carronade rules work, as I remember looking at them recently, yes, they can fire every turn, but if you save them up and you charge them for three turns, you get a much better output. It's
but
like the output damage.
The question to answer is, if you've only got 15 turns before the artifact disappears, and you've got to weigh up,
right?
Hey, do you have the luxury of waiting 5 turns? Because if they're Gorn, okay, so you start the scenario at weapon status 3 in SFB, and in FC you have the ability of basically starting with the second turn of plasma armed, but your batteries are empty. So you're basically only giving yourself maybe 5 or 6 launching opportunities. And on the SFB side of the ledger,
that's it.
You know, all of the Orions can use their own shuttles to weasel if they have to. But so you're kind of having to ask yourself, is it better to basically, even some of the ships basically carronade every turn, and at least you're getting some damage, whereas if you're, especially because you're taking incoming fire every turn, so the Orion is going to be coming to you to at least, you know, range that gives them a good result with quantum wave torpedoes. So I think that could make for an interesting dynamic in both game systems.
It certainly can. That's just it. That's one of the reasons why I thought it'd be a good idea to always have 3 or 4 quantum wave torpedoes in flight until I can account for all of my target ship's original shuttles. Then I alpha launch on them. Is because the fact is that, yes, there are some sneaky tricks that they didn't used to have for plasma carronades and a few other odds and ends. But the thing is that with taking 3 turns to recharge his Type G plasmas, even if he fast loads them as Type F, he's only going to get so many options out of them. And I can just drown him in quantum wave torpedoes over the same period of time. I have a suspicion that with the short ranges we're going to be dealing with, I'll probably end up seeing more bolts than seeking launches anyway.
Mm-hmm. But I think the other thing that's good about the carronade is that the hit value is much better than the bolt. So he doesn't have to worry about like spending 3 turns charging a bolt and then missing, or to the same extent. So his G-torps won't be able to carronade, but any of his F-torps can. So that might be something that he to keep an eye out for. But because I think even in FC, I mean, yes, the Orion has the natural stealth bonus, but you're giving yourself that much more of a chance to hit if you're using the carronade to hit roll rather than the bolt roll.
Well, unless I'm mistaken, the carronade suffers a damage penalty if it's fired at ships. It's intended primarily as anti-drone, anti-fighter. Can a plasma carronade damage another plasma torpedo? Would it even affect a quantum wave torpedo?
No.
Oh, well, the carronade was actually originally designed to fight cloak ships because one of the benefits of it, of the good to hit roll or the specific rules for it is that cloak ships get less of a benefit than they would than if you try to fire a bolt against it or even just a regular direct fire weapon. So,
oh, I see.
Yeah, basically, if he was using the carronade, he'd be using it against your ships, but it wouldn't have any benefit against the quantum wave torpedoes. You'd have to try to phaser those down. Or, because I almost think the thing as well is that you don't have to necessarily fire the quantum wave torpedo in a single punch. I mean, you've got 32 impulses worth, or in FC, 8 impulses worth.
Right.
You can string them along, and you can basically make it so that if he does drop a weasel, then how many, I don't remember, how many impulses worth does the weasel work? Because he can always just basically swing around and launch another two, one or two.
I believe the wild weasel continues to attract drones targeted on the original target through the end of the explosion period, which is 4 impulses after detonation. After that, I can actually target him rather than the pocket of gases that's what's left of the wild weasel. Mm-hmm. But but in a situation like this, I would have already switched targets, and I just keep going round robin until I found a target that just couldn't hurt me. I could hurt better.
And also the quantum wave torpedo with those splash damage, you can, even if you're not hitting the shield that you plan to, you're getting, you're chipping away at the other facings. And on top of that,
and he's got to do 14 points of phaser damage to knock to cripple the quantum wave torpedo and knock the splash damage off.
Mm-hmm.
It's another from there.
And
it's
ECM, isn't it? Because we were looking the rules over before, because I'm pretty sure that it has ECM.
Yeah, the quantum wave torpedoes have 3 points of ECM to protect itself. So
yeah,
it's
it doesn't
got
have
three...
an equivalent thing in FedCom, I don't believe, though. That's the only thing, because
right.
FedCom is generally much more forgiving in terms of giving, like, there's no things like a small target bonus, like even for drones and plasma torpedoes. It's generally a little bit more forgiving in terms of how you shoot things down. Oh, and also, things like Aegis fire control, because I know Paul is talking about it for Paul now, because none of the Andromedans have seeking weapons. But if, say, in Captain Rock 56, if you pick a force that does have seeking weapons and you're going against a ship, because I think one of the ships you're fighting against is a Klingon escort with Aegis.
Yep.
So in Fed Commander, it's more like limited Aegis rather than full Aegis, so that's why it would say E instead of A. But what it actually does is it allows the ship equipped with Aegis to shoot at nearby seeking weapons that have impacted in defensive fire phase. Because you know how they kind of fudge the impulse of impact,
yep,
in Fed Commander, because mm-hmm. you've got 4 moving sub pulses.
Yep.
So basically, once you get to the defensive fire phase, the ship itself can shoot at its own the seeking weapons that have impacted. But then, if you have a ship nearby with the Aegis fire control, it can also shoot at those same drones or same seeking weapons.
Layers upon layers of rules.
That is true. And,
but I just the other thing too is I kind of felt like I wanted to stick up for FedCom after some of the stuff that was, said about it last week. Because I mean, it is, there's a lot of it that does. Like, it's not basically just about simplifying things from FedCom. Like, there's definitely things that it adds or dynamics. Like, for example, as we mentioned about things like, star castling, because like that kind of tactic where if you basically try to sit and use your power to reinforce incoming hits, well, each hit can only be reinforced up to the batteries that you've got. And unless you've got an extra, then you're basically asking for trouble. So FedCom, in a sense, rewards movement to an extent that even more so than SFP would.
Right.
And
Definitely it penalizes you if you try to do something stupid like, sit still, in Star Castle. There's no benefit.
Yeah.
Because you don't get all that extra power that you have available, that you can't put that towards shields.
Mm-hmm.
So
there isn't much in Federation Commander you can use that surplus power for, is there?
Nope.
Well, you can basically use it to accelerate and decelerate during your movement subpulses. So
that's right. Any power not like spent at EA is treated as reserve warp.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So. It's different. Like, say, for example, if you're an empire that uses a single turn army weapons like Caribbeans or Klingons or whatever, then the energy allocation system, such as it is in Fate Commander, it basically almost like it makes it easier in a sense, because it gives you the discretion of being able to decide whether or not you're going to arm those weapons that turn and fire them, or if you're going to keep that power and use it for something else. Basically there's like, ins and outs and so forth, whatever that you get, that would differ compared to whereas an SFB, you have to commit all that power except for whatever's in your batteries. So it's almost like, I guess, everyone's flying an Andromeda. Or, like, they're basically having to kind of, like, run and gun rather than just, sort all the power out up front. But,
The
fighter's attack thing, sir.
Yeah, I was going to mention is that, of course, with FedCom also, is that there is nothing says, you have to use warp power. It's just power. So things like photons or displacement devices or anything else that normally would have different kinds of power that you'd have to use, that goes away. The Vudar, with the whole, you have to use impulse power. Well, you can't quite say that in VedCom. So.
Yeah, that actually applies, of course, to the Feds most of all, because they don't need to, and also the Federal Republic over in Omega, because they don't need to set aside warp power to arm photons. Mm-hmm. But, They still have their own concerns, like relative to like a more maneuver around the Empire, like the Klingons and stuff. So there's still the thing about whether or not you want to try to fight in open space, or if you want to try to do scenarios in terms of where you're defending a planet, or if you're attacking a base or a convoy or something like that. So
right, and FedCom, you still have multi-turn arming weapons, which is.
I felt that was maybe missed a bit, like when the FedCom tactics manual came out, because basically a lot of the play that was being referred to for the likes of the big plasma empires was basically about battles in open space, or rather battles in a kind of like what FedCom would call a tournament setup.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, in those situations, yes, the fact that you can every ship basically has a positron fly rail, so that you can, there's no acceleration limit, so it's much harder to actually catch a ship with plasma. That can basically be maybe more of a disadvantage than it would be over an SFB. But on the flip side, if you're playing a location map, like if you're using those ships to bombard a base or to attack a convoy, because there are still speed limits for certain types of ship that they commander. So, but the way that they're referred to is that if you look at the ship card, like a freighter, for example, it might say cannot set baseline speed 16 or baseline speed 24. Right. So no matter, even if power is power on that ship, there is still a mechanic in place to account for the fact that it's slow compared to a cruiser or anything like that.
Right.
You as a defender do have that complication in the sense that you can't basically just either have the freighter run away too quickly or have the escorting ships, get too far, run too far away from them either, like in terms of trying to shoot down plasma that's being targeted at them and stuff.
Yeah. Well, my dear friends, I think we'll wrap it up with that. It's been a pleasure having you on this evening. And before I say goodbye, I wish you both, and of course, everyone out there, a Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas. Happy holidays.
Happy holidays. That's right, yeah, because there's a number of various occasions happening over the next week or two, and want everyone who's experiencing one or more of those to hope they're enjoyable ones.
Yeah, another one's coming up also next week is Hanukkah is next week also. So makes things interesting.
I actually saw there's on the TV show The Goldbergs, they actually had where the mom, she always does this like embroidery stuff on shirts. And then her daughter actually did one for their grandkid. On the back of it, it says, "Oi to the world."
Oi to the world.
Oi.
Oh.
Oi. They say that the grade of any pun is in the oi of the beholder.
That's it. We're done. Jeff, it was lovely to have.
Sorry,
hang out
not
with
sorry.
You. Don't get me started on that. I was thinking about that one commercial. It's like it drives me nuts every single time I see it. But anyway, Jeff, you have a good night and drive safely out there.
I'll do that. Happy holidays, everybody.
Happy holidays. Gary, always a lovely time to have you with us, and you have a happy holidays.
Thank you.
Okay. Bye. So, got to talk about battle groups once more time. the topic that keeps on giving, I'm surprised. Well, actually, it's good. I will probably give more of a lowdown of what I did next time after everything is submitted, because I'm going to be putting mine in late. I should be able to submit mine tomorrow night. I got most of it done. I still need to do some minor things to tweak it. It's tough because I've got a Klingon force I'm fighting, which has both fighters and special sensors, and special sensors actually do something in FedCom, and I don't have a scout. And more importantly, from the I have to double. I'm pretty sure about this, which is you can't help. You can't defeat ECM. You only can give ECM. So. Even if I had a scout, it wouldn't help me attack his ships at all. It just would help defend my ships. That's all. Or it would help with identifying, the lab information that's required for getting information on the target. But anyway, with that, I am Paul Franz, and I bid you a good night.